Hello, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Thank you, Mr. Lacoste, for that piece. I always enjoy your original words. It reminded me of something I've been thinking about this week. I read that one of the goals of our lives should be to put a smile on the face of God, and just thinking of God as our best friend and how important it is to pray to Him just kind of tied in with that, I thought. Thank you. Well, I want to start today in Proverbs. Proverbs 18. We'll read Proverbs 18, verse 21, which says, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it," those who love to talk, and those who love the tongue, "will eat of its fruit." We often use words of death or discouragement, putting people down, and we need to focus on the power of the tongue and making sure our words are more like the words of life that it talks about in this verse. But far too often we can find ourselves using words of death, which so often leads to conflict among our loved ones. And that's what we're going to speak about today, is conflict. If you want to go ahead and put that up, Mr. Zevchek. No problem. So we're going to speak about conflict resolution today. The alternate title I gave this is How to Argue Less and Enjoy Life More. How to Argue Less and Enjoy Life More. The principles we're going to talk about can apply to any type of relationship, your relationships with your children, your relationship with friends or coworkers. We'll specifically talk quite a bit about resolving conflict within marriage, but really the points can apply to any relationship that you have conflict in. You know, looking back when I was prior to marriage and looking forward to marriage, I can honestly say, and I'm not proud to say this, but Sharon and I argued or argue in marriage a lot more than I thought we would prior to being married. I don't know if it was just my vanity thinking that, or my high hopes, or what, but I just kind of envisioned that marriage would be very blissful, that we would never really argue, that I'd be the perfect husband and father, and always know what to say and do, and it just didn't, you know, work out that way always. But we've grown a lot in that, and part of that's what I want to share with you today. For one thing, I'm a pretty competitive person, and I'm probably less competitive now than when we were married, but I'm still a pretty competitive person, and Mrs. Fitch over there, she's a pretty competitive person, so we can go at it at times, and a lot of times we just disagree over silly things, but you know, in fact, most of our disagreements, I'll look back and I'll say, man, that was so silly. Why did we argue about that? But like I say, we've grown a lot over the years. We argue far less than we used to. And today I'd like to share with you some of the reasons why and areas we've grown in and what's different now than it used to be. We'll get into the weeds a little bit later on, but I can tell you, one of the great secrets with arguing less with your spouse or in any relationship, undeniably, is growing closer to God. Long term, that's the best solution. And I say it's undeniable because as we spiritually mature, as we think more like Christ would have us think and put the mind of God within us. Christ is not a God of conflict. He's a God of peace. And so as we grow closer to God over time, that can't help but improve the relationships we have and the harmony that we have within those relationships. So the number one thing that I believe we can do to have less conflict in our lives is to focus on our relationship with God and growing and maturing spiritually, and we can't help but have less conflict. But that's a long-term solution, as I say. What are some of the more midterm things we can do? Before we get into the nitty-gritty, I want to start by reviewing some overarching principles. Corbin, did you drink either of these waters?
No.
Okay, thank you. First point we're going to look at is a certain amount of disagreement in any relationship is perfectly normal. We should understand that. Having a view that life is going to be perfect with never any conflict is unrealistic. So a certain amount of disagreement is perfectly normal. What really matters is how we handle disputes when they arise, though. We've got to get our tongues under control, as we heard about in Proverbs that we started with. Let's look also at James 3. James 3, we'll start in verse 2, which says, "For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body through those bits. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they're turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire and a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." So we have to get our tongues under control. This next point we're going to look at, you don't hear about much, but I think it's you can't underestimate it or overstate how important it is in understanding conflict in general, and certainly as it relates to marital conflict. And that's Proverbs 13:10, which says, "Only by pride comes contention." Only by pride comes contention. It says, "Where there is no strife, there is pride." So we'd still have disagreements without our pride getting in the way, but it doesn't have to rise to the level of contention. But our pride gets in the way, and we get backed up and we want to fight back. So if we want to argue less, one of the greatest keys to get your is to get your pride and your vanity in check. A humble heart will be less inclined to be offended. When I look back, this was certainly an issue for us. For instance, especially early on in marriage, I think you're sensitive to your God-given roles, and you know, a young man thinks, well, this is my chance to be the head of the family, and if you don't feel respected, or when you don't feel respected, your pride gets up and you want to, you know, let her know that you've been offended. You know, over time I've learned that, you know, everybody has their roles within the family. And the husband's wife is to, the husband's role is to love their wives as Christ loved the church. And the wife's, one of her roles is to respect her husband as the head of the family. But what's very important is you each answer to God for your side of the equation. The husband is responsible for loving his wife as Christ loved the church. And that's what he's accountable to. And the wife has things she's accountable to. But we don't need to worry about each other. We have to worry about our own selves in that respect. So we have to look at prideful motives in any of our disputes. And in any heated argument or disagreement, pride is there and getting in the way, and you have to realize that and understand it so you can deal with it. Let's look at James 4, 1 through 6. Answer this question, what causes fights? James 4 says, where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit who dwells in us yearns jealousy, but he who gives more grace... Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. If we look at the overall kind of themes in that passage of what causes wars and fights among us, the three themes that really stuck out to me were selfishness. Selfishness obviously leads to so many fights. Worldliness. Just wanting to please ourselves and to be more worldly minded than we should be, and then it ends with pride again. God resists the proud, he gives grace to the humble. So how do we combat those things? Well, we combat them with love. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 13, verses 5 through 7. The themes that come out here is love does not behave rudely. Love does not behave rudely. Love does not seek its own. So many arguments and contentions come from seeking our own will. Love is not provoked. Love is not provoked. Love thinks no evil. And love bears all things, and love endures all things. That's the mind of Christ there. If we can inculcate those things into our lives, there'll be far less conflict in any of our relationships. If we don't allow ourselves to be provoked or think no evil, if we can endure all things. So with those principles in mind, let's move on next to what do couples most often fight over? What do couples most often fight over? You can Google that, and as I have, and most everyone seems to have very similar lists to this. They may order them differently, but very similar things. The number one cause that couples argue consistently comes up as money. And when you look at it, all of these things, the biggest key to resolving them is good communication. You know, if one, as so often is the case in a marriage, if one is a spender and one is a saver, you're going to have conflict there. But what you need to resolve that is to sit down and develop a plan of how you're going to spend your money or a budget and commit to sticking to that plan, and you'll have far less issues over money. Second thing, sex, again, communication. You can talk about frequency. You can talk about what you're comfortable with or not. Work and household responsibilities. It would tend that, you know, one maybe feels they're working harder around the house than the other one, and that can cause arguments. But again, if you communicate how you're going to divide up household responsibilities, you can relieve a lot of that. Children and parenting. This would be the number one cause of conflict in our marriage. We've talked about that and agree with that. You know, everyone is brought up in different ways, so it's quite common to have different views of how you're going to rear the children. I found this quote that I liked. Now, at the bottom, you'll see it's from eHarmony.com. I wasn't on there searching for, you know, anything. But when I Googled what do couples most often argue about, they happen to have a good article on it. So, the article says, realize that you don't both have to parent in the exact same way. Decide which values and principles are most important, and then commit to responding from a united front. Keep in mind that it's okay if parents approach things differently from time to time. And when you disagree on how to handle a situation, discuss it out of the children's sight, and then make sure that your kids realize that you're working together as a team. Or if your kids know that you two disagree on how to handle a matter, discuss it with the children and offer them a model of how two mature adults communicate and negotiate when they don't agree. Again, though, talk about it and come up with a solution you can both live with. And where you disagree, you can be open about why you would with the kids and help them to see how mature adults work things out. The next cause of most fights is feeling disrespected or unloved. Again, a little humility goes a long way. Little humility goes a long way. So they did this survey, and when thousands of couples were interviewed about what kept their marriages together, the two most common provided answers revolved around, one, giving regular honor to your spouse, and controlling your anger when you do disagree. By far the best strategy in resolving any conflict is to avert arguments before they even start. Regularly pray Psalm 141, verse 3. It says, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Ephesians 4:29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for edification. Let all bitterness be put away from you. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted. In other words, the first line of defense is our tongue, the words that we use. Are we going to control them or let it run amok? Proverbs 12:18 says, there's one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. So what is the best response if someone comes at you with real or perceived words that are like sword thrusts? The Bible gives us some great points. The first one we'd look at is a soft answer turns away wrath. Proverbs 15:1. Someone comes at you and they're looking for a fight. They come at you with words like sword thrust. You can deflect that with a soft answer, turning away wrath. Proverbs 13:3 says, "He who opens wide his lips shall have destruction." In other words, opening wide your lips is you're ready to just give it back to him. And God says, no, don't do that. A soft answer turns away wrath. Just remember, it takes two to fight. It takes two to fight. 1 Peter 3:8-9, and the NIV says, don't add insult for insult. If someone comes and they want to insult you, don't insult them back. You can take the higher ground. You can give that soft answer and avoid the argument. Don't have to just ignore them, but you might say something like, maybe we should discuss this later. But no matter how hard you try, you're still going to get into some arguments. So next we're going to look at different reactions people have for handling conflict. Knowing what type of tendency you have can help you manage your own reactions and develop better ways to handle conflict. So what are some typical reactions people have? First one we're going to look at is... That didn't come up right. But it's those who want to withdraw when conflict arises. Those who want to withdraw when conflict arises. These are people that don't like conflict. They don't want any part of the whole process. They just want to get away. They don't want to argue about it. They don't want to resolve it either. They just want to ignore it. I kind of tend to fall in this category. I remember early on in marriage, so we lived in a quite a bit smaller house than we live in now. We also had Sharon's parents living with us. And if we would get into a disagreement, I'd feel a little like claustrophobic. And even though I'm sure her parents knew I was right, I got in the habit of I would get in my car and I'd just have to get away. Now, I was not... There was no thought in me that I was leaving the marriage or anything like that. I just needed a time out and a time away. So I'd get in my car and go out. And then Sharon let me know how much that bothered her because she thought, well, I was leaving and that wasn't a good thing. So I stopped doing that. But again, I realized that's my tendency. And it is to this day. I will like to, if we get into an argument or whatever, I'll kind of like ignore it and just hope it goes away, won't bring it up, and just think, oh, it's been a day. Surely she's forgotten that. And then she comes in and he's like, you know we need to talk, don't you? And I'm like, oh, do we have to? And she's like, well, we haven't resolved it. And I'm like, well, I'm fine now. I've gotten over it. But, you know, so... just differences of way we handle things. It's okay to separate for a time, though, but just remember, you know, there is the biblical principle, do not let the sun go down on your wrath. So it's, you know, the biblical model is, if you need a timeout, need to cool off a little bit, that's fine, but try to resolve it by the end of the day. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. The next one we're going to look at is those who are prone to attack when conflict arises. Those who are prone to attack. Some people like to argue. They use this, they've got a lot of pent-up anger, and when any argument arises, they want to, okay, I'm ready for this. let's go at it. And they will, these are the types that they would bring up old baggage into the new argument. It's like, I've never really gotten over the argument from last week or 2 weeks ago, so it's time again, we're going to argue, let's go for it. And they'll bring up a lot of old baggage. They would be the type that would typically say things like, you always, you never, you know, and just kind of, again, bring a lot of old things into the argument, not really deal with the exact thing that's going on right at that moment. They use an argument as an excuse to explode, bring up old grievances along the way. Let's turn to Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18. And verses 6 through 7 says, a fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. So his mouth calls for blows. I want to bring up that picture of the boxing ring, because those that want to attack, and we're talking about an analogy here, not talking about physical abuse, but in an argument, if you're just wanting to attack the other person, you're landing all of these metaphorical blows with your words, and that forces the other person, they've got to sit there and just defend themselves. And if you're attacking, or if you're defending, none of you are focused on the real problem, which is resolving the conflict at hand. So you've got to realize that either attacking or defending isn't really dealing with the problem. The next reaction to conflict we're going to look at is closely related to those who are prone to attack, those who really need to win the argument. Those who really, it's important to them to win, to realize that I'm right and you're wrong. I was joking with Sharon on the way here because we weren't arguing, but we're having this, you know, I enjoy my car. I got this, it's a used car, but it was new to me this year, and it's the nicest car I've ever had. Sharon gets in, she says, I hate your car. So, like, why do you hate my car? Because you never have tissue in it. So if I had my tissue in the car, my tissue box, I'd be fine. So she goes on about this. I'm like, why do you hate my car? Because you don't have tissue. And then at the end she says, you know I'm right and you're wrong. And it just, I said, you're giving me all sorts of fodder for my sermon, because we know Sharon falls in this category. She really wants to win. These are the type of people that they like to have the last word. They need the other party to acknowledge they're wrong, you're right. By the way, you know, I tease Sharon a lot in my sermons. Just so everyone knows, I only do that because I know she can handle it. She can dish it out. She's a very very strong woman there. So, but again, if you're trying to prove that you're right is more important than de-escalating the argument, you know, all of these categories people fall in have their faults. But again, if you're just trying to prove you're right, you're not de-escalating the argument. These are the type of people it would be harder for them typically to say they're sorry. The next group of people we're going to look at are like the angels of the world. But there are people that are just naturally prone to, they want to resolve the conflict, and they're willing to compromise if needed. That showed up just fine on my computer. But I have an HP, and this is a Mac, so it's just the difference. But those who seek to resolve conflict and are willing to compromise if necessary. So knowing which of those categories falls in can be helpful. So let's look at steps to resolving conflict. Steps to resolving conflict. Now, I didn't want to give a long list or anything like that. So you're in this argument and you're like thinking, okay, what do I got to do? I've got to find my sermon notes so I know how to get through this argument here. Didn't want to give a lot of points or anything, but I wanted to give you a word picture. And I hope that you will think about this the next time that you're in an argument or a dispute. The word picture is a boxing ring. And I just want you to think about that. And I want you to remember that the most important thing you can do to resolve conflict is to step out of the ring. You've got to get out of the ring. And if the person you're arguing with doesn't want to come out with you, then you get out anyway. Remember, it takes two to argue. And if one of you gets out, typically the other one will follow, but you've got to get out of the ring. The ring is where you fight. The ring is where you give verbal jabs at each other, or you're defending or attacking or wanting to win and beat the other person. You've just got to get away from all of that. You've got to step out of the ring. And then you want to pray. Ask God to help you see your error, not ask God to help the other person to see their error, but you want to pray and ask God to help you see your error. And you can do that either alone or together. If the other person's willing to pray with you, that would be great. Sharon's wonderful at that. I'm the type of person, I'm in the argument or whatever, and she just says, "Can we pray?" I'm like, "I don't feel like praying." But then, you know, God is watching. So you said, "Yes, Sharon, we will pray." And invariably it works and it does help. But pray and ask God to help you see your fault. And then discuss the central issue. Discuss the central issue. Each person should explain their view and seek to understand the other person. Don't bring up past or unrelated things. Listen carefully and speak tactfully. And then the final point is everyone should be willing to sincerely, could have underlined, sincerely apologize for their contribution to the argument. Says each party must be willing to forgive and forget. Proverbs 16:24 says, "Pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and healing to the bones." So we've got to step out of the ring to review, to get away from the argument. Step out, pray about it. Discuss the central issue, listen to the other person, hear them out, explain your view, and seek to resolve it. And then each person apologizes for their contribution to the argument. You know, I was putting this together last month, and as the week I was putting it together is when Mrs. Hargrove died. She's a long-term spouse of a minister that had been a minister since the early days of the church. And they had just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, and she died. And I was thinking that week how, because we knew the Hargroves, and I was just thinking, wow, it'd be so hard to... This was that night. I was laying in bed, and I was thinking, you know, Mr. Hargroves, laying in bed alone after 50 years of being married to his spouse and sleeping with his wife. And, you know, I thought how sad that will be. Yet, you know, each of us, obviously we hope Christ returns in our lifetime, but if he doesn't, each of us that are married are going to come to a spot when our spouse dies and the surviving spouse is going to have to go on alone. And it just hit me, you know, at that point as I was putting together the message, everyone's going to realize, you know, we argued about the silliest things. And we all will wish at that point that we were much better at conflict resolution and just let things go, let our pride go, and just had a more harmonious marriage. So that was, to me, an encouragement to put this into practice and argue less. So I wanted to leave you with the following scripture that I chose for the conclusion. Just simply, God is the author of peace. God is the author of peace. So if we want less conflict in our lives, we need to be more like God, who's the author of peace.